Hello, and welcome to the Epic Echo Media Musings. In this podcast, we'll look at the movies and TV shows you know and love, and the things in them that we don't love so much. We'll shed our insight on the problematic pieces of the media we consume while giving you tips to use those pieces to start great conversations. The point of our podcast isn't that you stop watching your favorite shows and movies, but instead to help you use them to start empowering conversations with the folks you watch them with. Enjoy. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Media Musings. Today, I am sitting down with Veronica McDade, the graduate assistant for the Office of Accessibility Services at Shepherd University, and we are going to be talking about 10 Things I Hate About You. 10 Things I Hate About You was written by Karen McCullough and Kirsten Smith and was directed by Gil Younger. The movie stars Julia Stiles as Kat Stratford and Heath Ledger as Patrick Verona. The movie is also made up of a list of stars such as Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Gabrielle Union, Allison Janney, and the list continues. Adapted loosely from William Shakespeare's play, The Taming of the Shrew, 10 Things I Hate About You focuses primarily on the relationship between two sisters struggling to navigate the world of high school while discovering things about themselves and their relationships. The plot focuses on the fact that Kat's younger sister, Bianca, wants to date boys, but isn't allowed by her father until her older sister, Kat, dates as well. A plan is devised for Bianca's friends to set Kat up in a relationship with mysterious bad boy, Patrick Verona. The movie's theatrical debut was on March 31st, 1999, and it grossed $38.2 million at the box office. The movie is rated PG-13 for crude, sex-related humor and dialogue, alcohol and drug-related scenes, all involving teens. 10 Things I Hate About You remains a treasured classic and is still pretty widely known. For me personally, 10 Things I Hate About You is absolutely in my top five favorite movies of all time, which is one of the reasons that I am so excited to point out some of the flaws in it so that I and you can continue watching it for all of time to come without having to worry about the negative things that we worry about passing on. Veronica, I'm going to give you a quick second to introduce yourself before we start picking apart this movie.
Awesome. Thank you, Nora. So like Nora said, my name is Veronica. I'm the graduate assistant for the Office of Accessibility Services, and I work really closely with our Title IX director and the Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. So that's why I am here today in honor of Stalking Awareness Month. And I actually, for the first time ever, watched this movie a couple of days ago, so it's very fresh in my mind, but it's also, like Nora said, my roommate's one of her favorite movies, so I definitely feel like watching it with her got me several different perspectives, but I was also watching it for the purpose of today. So I feel like I had a very different viewpoint than she did. So yeah, I'm looking forward to talking about it.
Yeah, I always rewatch every movie that we cover right before so that it's fresh in my mind. With this one, it was a little bit different because it's one of my movies that I can pretty much quote offhand as I'm watching it. If you watch it with me, you're going to be annoyed because I know line for line most of the scenes, but rewatching it through this lens was definitely a little bit different. I kind of had to focus in a little bit harder and not just, you know, rewatch one of my favorite movies. But I was able to pick out some pretty great points of conversation here for us. And we are going to be talking a little bit about stalking. It is Stalking Awareness Month, as Veronica says. And we are going to cover some of the stalking stereotypes that we see in this movie and how those can translate into real world situations. So I'm going to kind of take us scene for scene, hopefully in order as I remember them, some of the issues that we've pointed out in the movie. First things first, this is one of my favorite scenes in the movie as an adult, but as a teenager, trying to think back to what that mindset was like, it's definitely a little bit jarring. So Allison Janney, one of my favorite actresses of all time, plays the guidance counselor in this movie. And in one of the first scenes of the film, we see her openly at her desk in a public high school, writing a graphically sexual novel with students present. The students actually help her come up with terms to use to describe genitalia. So that's obviously, we've got some huge issues there. She's an adult. These are high school students. This is super inappropriate conversation. Right away, this is a red flag. It should be a red flag for all of us. Veronica, did you notice that one?
Yeah, for sure. I was joking about it actually with my roommate when we were watching it, but I definitely thought in and of itself, very inappropriate, as you just said, because it is not a topic that is meant to be discussed like that with teenagers. And also something I noticed that she was not really doing her job as a guidance counselor because she was so invested in writing her little book. So I feel like that part of it also kind of, I noticed that at least, because even when one of the characters like comes in to talk to her, she basically dismisses him and like doesn't want to talk to him because she's so like wrapped up in writing her book. So I feel like it's just not super, she's not really super good at her job.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing for a guidance counselor to talk openly about students, about safe sex, about sex in general. Obviously, high school students, we know, are sexually active in most cases. And that's something that we can kind of discuss in an open setting sometimes. However, in this case, it was pretty inappropriate. There's no real educational value coming to the students from this. It's just very graphic, very inappropriate, and she's basically just writing like a smut novel. So definitely a red flag there. A great conversation starter if you want to talk to your teenagers about inappropriate conversations with staff members, with just other adults. It's a great one to point out and kind of draw that boundary, explain to the teens in your life that this is not appropriate. You guys are not on the same age level. You're not on the same wavelengths. So we probably shouldn't be having those conversations. Moving right along to Kat Stratford, my favorite character in the film, someone that I've always looked up to as a fictional character. Throughout the movie, we see several instances of her being both physically and kind of inadvertently stalked by Patrick. Some of you might think that this can't really be stalking because this is a rom-com, but as we've discussed several times throughout this series, a lot of times romantic comedies will carry on these tropes of stalking for love. And in this case, I think that's exactly what we see here. It's kind of passed off to us as being a little bit sweet when he's following her around, like, oh, he's trying to learn what she likes. But I think that there are better ways, maybe conversation, to find those things out rather than following her around, getting information through her friends. Veronica, did you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, that was definitely something when I was watching it with my roommate, she completely forgot these scenes even happen because of how much she really likes his character, especially towards the end of the movie. And when I was watching it, I was like, oh, there he is again. He's just showing up unannounced, like at her house that he's never been to. So that was terrifying, honestly, to me, that he was just there. And then there were several times, like you had said, that her friends and her sister had mentioned, like, oh, she's going to be at this club tonight. You should, you know, go and just, you know, casually bump into her. And like you said, also, it's shown like he's pursuing her romantically, and it's not really shown as like creepy. But if the label on the movie was like drama or horror, I would very much take that as like, oh, great, he's just showing up wherever she is. That's super creepy. But again, because it's a rom-com, it's portrayed way more of like, oh, pursuing. And, you know, he's just really like dedicated to wanting to get to know her better, which is also, again, just kind of terrifying. Since again, there's a lot of times like there weren't like really like cell phones like super in use at this point. So like there was no way for him to like know this information from her other than just figuring out where she was at all costs. And again, very terrifying, especially towards the beginning, because I remember some of the earlier interactions, she had blatantly told him no several times when he had asked her out, but he kept doing it. And then he kept continuing to show up where she was in order to like pursue her. So I feel like that's also another red flag in and of itself, that he just didn't take no for an answer. But again, I also feel like that's another trope of like, oh, you know, if she says no, just keep, you know, going at her, because, you know, she, you know, she'll cave eventually. You know, people or women want to be pursued, so you should just keep asking until they say yes, which obviously not the truth. And the first time someone says no should be enough.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I was absolutely about to go there next. That's pretty much what the stalking for love trope is about, right? I mean, all we see in all of these romantic comedies, especially from this time period, this movie came out in 1999, especially through like the early 2000s, we saw a lot of these romantic comedies where you know, the whole kind of premise is that you have a guy and a girl, they're not interested in each other in the beginning, but after so much, you know, pestering and gathering information and all these other things, that he's eventually able to wear her down. And I don't know about you, but that's not how I perceive starting a healthy relationship. That's never going to birth a healthy relationship, I don't think, in the real world. Although it's nice to kind of live in the fantasy world of movies, sometimes we have to think realistically, and pestering someone, wearing someone down, that's actually considered non-consensual. So we don't want to stray into that area. We want to avoid that. So that acquaintance stalking, I also wanted to highlight. A lot of people may not know that this is considered an aspect of stalking, but gathering information through your friends, through your family members, that's gathering information without your consent. That could cause someone to feel afraid. They don't know what information that you're getting. They don't know when you're going to show up, where you're going to show up, what information you've already been able to get through your friends and family. And the definition of stalking very clearly states that it's just a series of actions that causes a reasonable person to feel fear. And I think that in some cases, not in this movie, obviously, but in some cases, these actions would cause a reasonable person to feel fear. Although I don't know if we can consider a fictional character reasonable, but that's why we're here to discuss this today. So one of my favorite scenes in the movie, unfortunately, I am going to have to pick apart. This is hard for me to do because this is just one of my favorite movie moments of all time. And I think we all know where I'm going. The moment where Patrick Verona has his huge debut. He's on the stairs and he's running down and he's getting chased by security because he's got the microphone and he's singing to her. And I absolutely love that moment. I think it's so romantic and so beautiful until you pair it up, unfortunately, with those other aspects of stalking that we've had. Another aspect of stalking that is very much real is grand and public gestures. So a lot of times in the real world, a grand public gesture is done solely for the purpose of kind of forcing someone to accept it. So if you're in private and he keeps coming to you and saying, you know, please go out with me, please go out with me, and you keep turning him down, then by putting you in front of an audience full of people and doing something that seems very romantic, you're gonna feel pressured to say yes. Which is AKA coercion, which is, again, not the way that you want to start this relationship. I'm curious, though, to know what you thought of it as having your first time watching it be for this podcast. What did you think when you saw that scene?
I definitely also initially loved it because I think it's portrayed very sweet that he went through all of the effort to get the band to play and then he was singing, which I also did not know Heath Ledger could sing. So that was a cool thing because right? I didn't know that. But yeah, very sweet. And the song he's singing is very sweet. And it completely, like, she had no idea what was going on and everyone was like clapping afterwards and it, you know, very like grand romantic gesture, everything, you know, in your head, you grow up and you're like, oh, I would just love for someone to do something like that for me. But yeah, as you were saying that, it kind of just reminded me, not even of one instance, but like, I feel like this happened all throughout high school, not to myself, but the people around me. I noticed that like when people would ask someone else to prom or homecoming, they would always do it in this very grand way. And for people that were in couples or like already had agreed that they were going to go to the dance, totally fine, super sweet, very romantic in some instances. But I definitely knew people that was only happening where the person would ask in public for that reason to make the other person feel pressured, because who's going to want to say no in front of your entire class or
especially after someone's just done this huge romantic gesture, right? So that if you're one of the people in that band, you're probably also sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, this is so sweet. I wish someone would do this for me. But if you're Kat, you're going to have a different view, right?
Right. Exactly. And I think also in the movie, he does it partially to woo her over because she wasn't really 100% sold on him yet. Again, I think it would have been a lot different if she had already agreed to go to the dance with him. It would have been a very different thing, but I definitely think that's looking at it, you know, and through this lens can be used to, again, coerce people. And I knew, again, a lot of people in high school that this happened where they got asked out in this very grand way to go to the prom or whatever and had to privately later tell them no because they were uncomfortable in doing it in that moment. And then the other person would get more upset and then use it against them to be like, well, you already said yes. And you said yes in front of all these people. So if you say no now, it's going to be really embarrassing for me. So basically you have to go with me. And then again, that just spirals into more and more inappropriate coercion of other people and kind of guilt tripping people into doing things that they don't want to do, which is super unfair. And again, if that was the whole reason you're asking them out is because you're trying to force them to go with you, super not okay.
It's kind of like a proposal, right? You don't propose to somebody if you've never had a conversation about getting married to them, especially not in public, because you would want to know that that person is probably going to say yes before you spend the time, the effort, the money on the ring and the event and all of those things. You kind of have to think about it through the same lens. If you're going to ask someone to do something in a very public setting, you want to know how they're probably going to react. The gesture should be more for the romantic aspect of it than for the actual, hey, will you do this with me? I think that gestures can be really beautiful. I'm not saying don't ever have a romantic grand gesture for your loved ones. All I'm saying is you should probably know how they feel about what the gesture is about before you go ahead and do it. You want to make sure that everybody still feels safe and comfy. And obviously, if your partner or your whoever is uncomfortable in public settings in general, which it seems that Kat is not very extroverted, it seems like she doesn't really talk to a lot of the people that she goes to school with, let alone like their company. So it's just probably not a great environment to spring that on her. Although I do love the scene and I will continue to watch it with all the romantic, happy, fuzzy feelings. We just, again, have to be ready to have these conversations and we have to be ready to apply these scenarios to the real world. So that's why we're bringing all of these things to your attention today. Moving along, there are a couple. Oddly enough, as I was watching this movie for this purpose, it kind of really struck me that I hadn't noticed these things before, but we actually have two instances of flashing in this movie, which is obviously not okay. It's harassment. But in the one case, we have Kat who flashes. She pulls her shirt up to get Patrick out of detention, actually to a teacher, which is incredibly inappropriate. She is a high school student. This man is an adult, a teacher or a coach. It's very inappropriate whether it had been the teacher or the students. Obviously that should not have happened. And then we have another teenager in the lunchroom at one point in the movie who acts like he's going to flash everyone, but it's actually a bratwurst from the lunch line. And again, although he didn't actually flash these people, we want to have those conversations that this is super inappropriate. I can remember times in high school where people would pull jokes like that, thinking it would be funny to like, oh, haha, but what if I did flash you? For some people, I mean, this can be incredibly triggering. This is absolutely considered harassment if you are actually flashing someone and you don't want to make people uncomfortable. And honestly, if this was at a real high school, I think we all know that these would have some pretty serious consequences. So if you want to shed any light on that.
Yeah, I remember the bratwurst portion with the student that I believe it was the guidance counselor made a joke to him about it. That he said that like he was going to, and then she made a joke that like, you know, it's not bratwurst sized or whatever. So again, just kind of making light of something that is really inappropriate and really traumatizing for people that have experienced this. So that I remember being kind of like an offhanded comment where they didn't really make a super big deal about it. But my roommate actually gave me forewarning that scene was coming up because she was like, this is the most uncomfortable thing you'll ever watch. Because the whole thing was uncomfortable before and after she did that. Like all of it was super weird. The way she was talking to her coach, the fact that the coach even like he stole one of the students like weed and was very implied that he was going to smoke it later. So that in and of itself was like also another big problem. But then, yeah, he was like talking with her and she was saying like very inappropriate things to him. And then obviously ended up flashing him. And the teacher didn't really seem to react like that was inappropriate either. So I feel like on both ends, it was really odd.
Yeah, because just to preface it for folks who haven't seen the scene, she's trying to get Patrick out of detention. And so she plays soccer and she's talking about like some plays that they could use to beat this team that they're rivals against. She's just trying to distract him, but she's like, what if we did this or did this or did this? And then she's like, or what if we distracted them? And he's like, how would we distract them? And she just lifts her shirt. And the coach just kind of stands there. And he's just kind of like, okay. And then they just kind of move on and he gets out of detention and we just kind of move past the whole scene, which is, again, really uncomfortable.
Yeah. And the students, I remember clapping too. And I don't know if that was more because she got him out of detention or because of the flashing or maybe both. But yeah, the whole thing was like very strange.
Very inappropriate.
And also, again, for the teacher, I feel like sometimes in these situations where there is a discussion with a teenager and then an adult, the adult should be the one, because sometimes teenagers don't understand some of those things and they might not understand the impact that some of those things might have, and how inappropriate genuinely those kinds of things are. But I feel like the teacher should have been the one to be like, this was inappropriate, like, now you're in trouble for this, this was not okay. And he had every chance to do that and didn't. Again, just letting her leave the detention without he doesn't say anything about it. She just leaves, they clap, and then she goes to meet up with Patrick later. It's just, it's a very strange scene, especially again, kind of overlooking the fact that she literally flashed her boobs at her teacher. Like, a super weird time.
Yeah, it's pretty uncomfortable. Obviously, I wish that they would have taken that as an opportunity to have a positive teacher. It seems like, I think that's kind of the joke in a lot of these movies, is like, oh, the adults are so incompetent and unable to do all of these things. Which isn't realistic. And that's also not the mindset that we want our teenagers going around and having. Like, we don't really want teenagers to see their, their teachers, their adults, their whomever, as being kind of like unable to, I don't know. It just seems a little bit strange to me. I think that they all just kind of seem a little bit incompetent or like maybe even a little dumb sometimes.
I agree. Which again, too, kind of would dissuade me as a teenager from wanting to talk to my teacher, or even, again, the guidance counselor was the same way. She was not helpful at all, even when the students were coming to her. And I feel like the only teacher I remember, I wouldn't even know if like approachable is the right word. I thought his character was really funny and he was really straightforward, the main teacher throughout the movie. But again, too, they're kind of making his persona very not approachable. Like, if I was going through something, would not want to go talk to him.
Absolutely.
So again, just kind of making the adults seem very other and not like part of like the teenagers' lives. And if you're going through something or whatever, those are the last people you'd want to turn to, which again, I think sends the wrong message to people in high school.
Yeah. And kind of on the same thread, I want to talk a little bit, because this movie, and I remember this from my childhood too, this movie talks a lot about sex and about sexual activity in teenagers, which I do not think is a bad thing in every instance in this movie, but we kind of, strangely enough, get a little bit of both. So obviously the whole like thing that I talked about it in the beginning is that we're trying to, one of the sisters wants to date, she can't date until the other one does. And their father always is constantly talking about not getting pregnant. You can't go out on dates because if you go out on dates, you'll get pregnant. And I think at one point he even says you'll get pregnant and then you'll die, which is obviously a dramatization. I think he's just being a little bit silly, but I do think that that's a really, really negative example to set for parent and teenager relationships. Obviously, as a parent, you would never want your child to feel super uncomfortable talking to you about sex or about relationships. And these daughters very clearly do not feel comfortable going to their dad about this kind of thing. They're not allowed to date. They're not allowed to, it seems like, even really talk about the topics of sex or relationships in their household, which isn't healthy, although it can be uncomfortable, especially, you know, for a father who has two teenage daughters. It can be uncomfortable and it can be awkward, but there's tons of tools and resources out there available to us to start having these conversations that are inevitably just going to help your teenagers have better relationships, have better and safer sexual encounters. But I also want to highlight that there is one positive moment that I do see in this movie where Kat, the older sister, sits down with her younger sister, Bianca, and they're talking about this boy who's, you know, kind of like a popular, pretty mean boy. And Kat actually discloses that she did sleep with him. And then the next day he like went and told everybody, I think was the thing. And she was very upset. And she just basically tells her younger sister not to have sex until she's ready, and with someone that she trusts. And I just think that that's a really positive moment.
For sure. And I actually do distinctly remember that part of the movie, because she had said but she only did it because everyone else was doing it, mm-hmm. Which I think is something that is not unique to her. I think that is a very real problem that happens a lot in high school, that people feel like they have to do certain things romantically or sexually with others because their friends are all doing it. Very like cliche little, you know, line there, but that part of it I definitely thought was very relatable because her sister was saying that. And then afterwards, like, he had been super mean to her about it, whatever. I can't remember exactly what the boy had done, but something that made her feel really uncomfortable and not valued as a person, not respected. And so she was definitely really like upset after. So I think that advice was really good. And I do remember with the dad, they don't go into it a bunch, but their mom had left them. So I also think that was part of the reason that he's really strict with them about their relationships, because I'm sure he felt very like upset when his wife had left. It seemed like she kind of did without warning. So that part of it, I think he was really hesitant for his daughters to potentially get into a situation like that. And he works as a doctor. I don't remember if he says exactly, but I know he helps deliver babies. I don't know if they ever exactly said what he does other than that, but he talks several times about, you know, the younger daughter, Bianca, was going out, and he was like, you have to put on the pregnancy belly before you go out to remind you, you know, that if you have sex, then you might get pregnant. And then this is what is going to happen to you, you know, to scare them. And he talks another time about how he helped like a 15-year-old deliver a baby. And he jokes, he's like, and you know what she said to me? I wish I had listened to my father and not had sex. Which again, are just kind of, I think they were meant to be funny because they were funny, but he definitely has a very skewed view, I think, between his line of work that he does. And also the fact that, again, his wife and their mother had left them a few years back. So I think that part of it also, I feel like, really tainted his view of relationships, which he very much projected on his children. So that's kind of why all of their views of like sex and relationships are kind of messed up.
Yeah, and I think it just continues this very, very real life situation where a lot of parents think that the way to talk to your teenagers about sex is using fear, fear of the possibilities, fear of the outcome that could happen, which there are so many studies and there's so much research that just says that that does not work. Having open, honest conversations about the realities of sex, the realities that teenagers are having sex, giving them healthy and safe options to be able to do so. We know that those things are way more effective. We knew those things in 1999 too, but again, I think that these are just kind of meant to be a little bit playful, but that's why we can use this movie as a tool to have these conversations. Speaking of which, I love it that at the end of every podcast, I kind of take a moment where I share some tips, and then I will have my guest Veronica share some tips as well on what conversations we should be having about 10 Things I Hate About You as we watch it. I want to preface it though with saying, of course, that while we're giving you all of these tools and pointing out all of these negative things in this movie, the purpose is not so that you don't watch it anymore. We actually encourage you to watch it at least one more time with your loved ones, with teenagers in your life, to have these conversations, to start building these skills so that when we're out in the real world and we encounter these situations, we've already kind of got some tools in our backpack to talk about them. So I'm going to go first and share a couple of the things that I would hope we can start conversations about, and then I will have Veronica go next. So the biggest one for me, I've kind of already talked about. This is one of my biggest passions. I think that I have several teenage siblings. I have teenage cousins, lots of teenagers in my life. And this is one of my favorite movies, as I said. So I think it would be most important for me to sit them down and just really talk about the aspect of teenagers having sex. It's really uncomfortable, as I've said, to kind of start these conversations sometimes, but if we have a movie that's talking about it already, it really opens the door because we're both watching the same thing. I can see that you're reacting to it and I'm reacting to it. So we might as well open the door for some conversation. I would definitely talk about how to have safe sex, not abstinence. As we know, that doesn't really work. So I would just talk about safe sex, the consequences, both physically and emotionally, of unsafe sex. I would also make sure to bring up the stalking aspects, of course, how to not begin a relationship in such an unhealthy way. I would want to make sure that I talk about how Patrick although we want to perceive him as the sweetheart that he is, goes about this relationship all wrong. He should have definitely gone to Kat first. And once she turned him down, he should have just taken that as a no. We, of course, know that this was a part of a bet, which is another rom-com trope. He was kind of being paid to take Kat out, which kind of opens up another door. Obviously, that should never happen in real life to begin with. But I think that those are where I would start. Veronica, how about you?
Yeah, I definitely agree very much so with both of those things. And I think something that's not super brought up in the movie is Bianca's relationship with, I don't remember the character's name, but Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He is like new to the school and he like immediately has a lot of like lust for her. Like he thinks she's very beautiful and wants to go out with her. But his friend says that it's like a long shot. She's super popular, so there's no point. And so that also kind of is the beginning of that scheme there that he, you know, talks with Bianca about it. And that's when they kind of, you know, draw up all of the like, oh, let's pay Patrick to go out with her so that way you can go on a date. And she's manipulating Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character to go out with the popular guy. So I feel like obviously Patrick and Kat's relationship is really, really important to highlight because there's very obvious signs of stalking and manipulation and like deception that are very, very uncomfortable and super not appropriate and unhealthy. But I definitely think their relationship too between Bianca and his character are also something to point out because she's super disrespectful to him. She's also manipulating him and using him to get something that she wants. And I feel like that's just another discussion to kind of talk about, especially with like relationships, boundaries and trust and being honest, because those things are really important, and starting off a relationship not based on those things is bound to end very, very poorly. So I think that's another kind of example that's very, very different from Kat and Patrick's like relationship and how that kind of starts. I think theirs is a very different but very also valid way to kind of express like what is appropriate and not appropriate in a relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've heard all of our tips, all of our tricks for these conversation starters. At your next 10 Things I Hate About You viewing party, we hope that you'll choose to start at least one of these conversations. You don't have to start it in a negative way. Just as we've kept things lighthearted and positive today, you can do the same. Definitely want to bring up the real life implications of these stalking stereotypes, as well as these negative relationship stereotypes. And we want to talk about positive sex talks and not fearful sex talks with teenagers. So as you're watching 10 Things I Hate About You next, I hope you start one of these conversations. Thank you so much, Veronica, for being here with me today.
Thank you so much for having me. This is a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And we will see y'all next time. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Media Musings. Do you have an idea for a TV show or a movie that we should talk about next? Send your ideas over to us at epicwv.org/epic-echo. Thanks for listening.